Hi, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 20th of November. Americans Reading is our focus, the first hour of the program today, and I'm sure you're familiar with the report that was released yesterday by the National Endowment for the Arts, To Read or Not to Read, A Question of National Consequence. The report tells the story of a trend that is simple, consistent, and alarming. The director of the NEA says, although there has been measurable progress in recent years in reading ability at the elementary school level, all progress appears to halt as children enter their teenage years. There's a general decline in reading among teenage and American adults, and most alarming, both reading ability and the habit of regular reading have greatly declined among college graduates. These negative trends have more than literary importance. As this report makes clear, the declines have demonstrable social, economic, cultural, and civic implications. We'll be talking about To Read or Not to Read, A Question of National Consequence this hour, and who comes to mind immediately when you think about reading is Nancy Pearl, who's a regular guest on our program and is doing everything in her power to get people to read. She suggests books for all ages. Her latest book is actually for kids and for teens, Book Crush. She is winner of the Women's National Book Association Award. She started that terrific idea, If All Seattle, because she lives in Seattle, read the same book. She's author of More Book Lust, Book Lust Journal, Book Lust 2006, A Reader's Calendar, Book Lust, Now Read This, A Guide to Mainstream Fiction, Now Read This, A Guide to Mainstream Fiction. One is from 1990 to 2001, and the other from 1978 to 1998. She has traveled all over the country talking about reading, and she has read so many books and remembers so many of the books. She just always astounds me every time she's on this program. A little bit later on this program, the general manager of Harry W. Schwartz Bookshops, which is a terrific independent bookshop with many locations in southeastern Wisconsin, will be joining us to talk about reading and the trends they're seeing in their stores. We'll be welcoming phone calls. I would imagine we're going to have a lot of them. I'm particularly interested, we're going to do something different with Nancy, is to find out, you are readers, we know that. You read, we all read. Why it is you do read and how you are able to get your children and people in your family to read as well. So that's the focus of the hour. It should be a really good hour. 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Should you be joining us in Milwaukee today, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Nancy, hello.
Hello, Kathleen.
So nice to have you with us.
Oh, it's always my pleasure.
So you saw this report yesterday, and your first response was what?
My first response was, we need to do a lot more work to, if this is indeed the trend, and I see no reason to doubt the studies that the NEA used to come up with this result, that we as librarians, as teachers, and as parents need to do a lot more work, to change that direction.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any idea, Nancy, you're a voracious reader, and it's probably hard for you to imagine anybody in America who doesn't read a book, and there are a lot of adults and a lot of young people who don't. How we got to this state? Is it video games? Is it watching television? Is it text messaging? Or what is it?
I think it's probably a combination of all of those things. I think that what everybody who is in the entertainment business, and I think in some ways booksellers, librarians, teachers, we're all in the entertainment business, although what we're trying to get people to be entertained by is books. I think what we're all, and you on the radio and television people, what we're struggling for is to get people to use their free time to do what we would like them to do. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, right.
And I have like this little smile when somebody says to me, oh, I just don't have time to read. Well, you know, what I want to say to them is, excuse me, but everybody has time to read. It's
right.
Just how you choose to spend that time.
Right.
And we're all scrambling to try to figure out how to get people to to do what we would like them to do in that precious free time.
Right. And when you look at this report, the amount of time that young people particularly, we all knew this, but they spend hours watching television every day, even with homework, even with sports. It's over 2 hours a day.
Right.
Obviously, you could be reading during
right.
that time.
And I think that it is the whole computer game. Sure, I think the computer had a big effect on that. And I know there are some people who believe that the reading that kids do on the computer is the equivalent of reading books. I would disagree about that. I think you get it's a totally different experience than the kind of experience you get from entering into the world of a particular book. Any book is unique and something that adds many dimensions to a person's life.
Mm-hmm. Would you agree with one of their conclusions here that the fact that we're not reading very much, Nancy, is, and I quote, a serious national problem? If at the current pace America continues to lose the habit of regular reading, the nation will suffer substantial economic, social, and civic setbacks.
Well, I know that taken with the previous study that the NEA did in 2004 about the decline in reading, based on their own studies rather than on other people's studies, it had some really interesting links between people who read and their kind of civic engagement. People who are readers
yeah.
tend to give to charity more than others. They tend to volunteer more. They tend to do good in the world at a higher level than those who don't read. For me, I just think that what reading does, because it can put you into the heart and the soul of another person or other people, be they from Mars or the 17th century, is a way of enlarging and enriching your own life.
Right.
And I think that that's something that we don't want to lose.
Right. The report did highlight 9-year-olds, and it showed that we kind of peak when we're 9 years old when it comes to reading, and it's all downhill after that. What's going on with 9-year-olds?
There are a lot of great books out there for 9-year-olds, and I think still at the age of 9, teachers, parents still have reading. Not that teachers don't always have reading at the forefront of their minds, but I think that the curriculum focuses for many schools still on reading for pleasure. But I think, in the years that follow, particularly the middle school and high school years, our focus changes from getting kids to love to read to getting kids to read those books that have been labeled as good for them to read.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's really where we need to start thinking very deeply about what the purpose is of those assignments.
Mm-hmm. The report also highlights, which I find amazing, the number of corporations who need to do remedial courses for employees so they get up to speed on reading. It highlights the number of prisoners in this country whose reading skills are just way below what the average
right.
is. It is there's a, just a direct correlation between the level at which you read and you get better, too, the more you read, and how far you'll go in society or won't go in society.
Right. And what I thought was lacking in that statistic was, those to me speak to two different things. And one is teaching people, the whole question of literacy and teaching people to read, and then moving on to teaching people to enjoy reading.
Mm-hmm.
I know if you're struggling over a sentence, it's hard to enjoy that. So there is that whole problem of getting people to read. But then, what good does it do them if they can read? And there are many people who I think we all know who can read very, very well, but just choose not to
mm-hmm.
because they haven't found anything in the books that have been offered to them or the books that they've heard about or read about that really meet them where they are, which is where I think you need to start.
Right, and certainly which is your crusade because you,
right.
of all people on this planet, have given them the book that they may need to start so that they will be engaged in reading.
My hope is that more people will start seeing the importance of talking about books that aren't on the bestseller list, for example,
mm-hmm.
or will sort of help find that what I was a bookseller, the books that you would hand sell to somebody. that you would say, oh, here's a wonderful novel that sounds right up your alley. Why don't you try it? Or something like that.
Right. And tell us, I've asked you this question many times, Nancy, but I'll ask it again because it seems so pertinent to our conversation. Tell me, of all the people I know, you're an amazing reader. I've said this to you so many times, but you remember all these books, and it becomes your life mission to give people just that right book of all ages. And for you, it served an important purpose in your life to be able to enter the world of books, right? Because life
yes.
wasn't all that great for you.
Right. You know, I came from one of those households that wasn't particularly happy, and I used the library and books that those librarians gave me as a means to escape the real world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for me, still one of the pleasures, and I have a very good life, very nice life now, but one of the pleasures still of opening a book and reading that first line and just being drawn in by the voice of the narrator is that sense of escaping from the here and now into a different place, a different person's life.
And was it one book? Is it one book that we remember that gets us reading, or is that not true?
I think for some people, it is that one book. For me, I think it was more the ambiance of the library and the caring of those two librarians. So for me, I couldn't point to one book and say, this turned me into a reader. I could point to some books and say, these taught me, you know, these gave me kind of a moral compass for my life, or these books helped me, or this book helped me through this particular difficult time, but not that turned me into a reader.
We're going to welcome phone calls for Nancy. We're responding to this major report that was issued yesterday by the National Endowment for the Arts, Reading at, well, they did in 2004, you'll recall, Reading at Risk, a survey of literary reading in America, and it showed that Americans in almost all age groups were reading fiction, poetry, and drama, and books at significantly lower rates than 10 to 20 years ago. Their new study shows that, well, it has some unsettling conclusions. Americans are spending less time reading. Reading comprehension skills are eroding. And the ramifications of this, that there are serious civic, social, cultural, and economic implications. We're welcoming calls. Nancy Pearl is with us. And a little bit later, Nancy will be joined by Daniel Golden, who's general manager of Harry W. Schwartz Bookshops. They are a wonderful independent bookshop chain in southeastern Wisconsin. I wouldn't call them a chain. Wonderful independents. They have a number of stores in southeastern Wisconsin. He's also a voracious reader, to find out how we counter this trend and the ramifications of this trend. 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. Or if you'd like to send us an email, we'd be happy to read it at talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. We start, Nancy, with Patricia from Milwaukee. Hi, Patricia.
Hi.
Hi.
My comment is just about why I find it's important to read, and it adds a dimension to my life that is so functional. It gives me my vocabulary for communicating and for understanding what someone else is saying, and with the simple words that I would get from computer reading or other just factual reading, I don't have just the exact word that conveys my feelings, my understandings, and I can't understand the other person as clearly as if I have, for a given concept, many ways of expressing it, just to get finding the exact word.
Yeah, I think that's a great comment, and I think that that speaks to the difference between reading a work of imagination, which a novel would be, or even a work of literary nonfiction, versus the kind of information access that one would get often from reading a computer screen.
Just an added thing, I have a sister-in-law who grew up in Hawaii and spoke pidgin English when she was little, and she said she was so many thoughts and feelings she had that there was no word for, but as she read, as she got older and read fiction particularly, she was able to say things that she had never been able to say. And I think for our children, my grandchildren, I read to them a lot, when they can find more words to say their feelings, it just affirms who they are.
Right. Yeah, how true.
Yeah.
How true. And to know also, to it sort of can build an empathy, too, to know that other people may help you see the world in a different way, but also may see some of what you're seeing in the world, and so you're connecting with people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Thank you very much for the program.
Thank you. Thanks so much for your call. Clark is next from West Bend. Hi, Clark.
Hi, good morning. A couple of things. Well, one is just a few minutes ago, your guest said the sanctuary of the library, I believe, something like that. And that was an experience I had. I was in fourth and fifth grade, and I actually had to travel downtown from where I lived to get to the library, but I loved going there. And I think, as I recall, I asked the librarian about a possible book, and she sent me off in this one. And I ended up, sorry about the background noise, and I eventually read the entire series. It was the Freddy the Pig. And if you're familiar with Freddy the Pig, it was written by Mr. Brooks. I don't remember his first name.
Walter.
Oh, Nancy, you're amazing.
And those were such wonderful books. And they taught moral lessons. And the Webb family, that was the spiders, and they lived on, his name escapes me, the farmer's name. And it was just wonderful, wonderful books.
Oh, that's a wonderful story. And you know, it seems to me that that's a story that talks about one of the other powers, one of the other, you know, good things that reading gives us, which is that when you open a book and start reading it, you and the author are like colluding to create that book. The two of you are creating that book for you. And that act of creativity is hard to find often in other areas of our life. It doesn't happen when we see a movie. It doesn't happen when we watch television, because that's all fed to us. But with a book, it's you creating the characters in your mind given the author's words.
Thank you so much for the call. Nancy Pearl is with us responding to the National Endowment for the Arts report yesterday. We saw it coming, but it's still quite alarming. That looks at reading. It is titled To Read or Not to Read, A Question of National Consequence, and many of us are choosing not to read. We're trying to look at why and how to get us to read and the consequences of being a nation that's not as concerned about reading as we used to be. Nancy has read probably more than anybody I know. She, in 2003, released Book Lust, and she's done a number of books since then. Her latest is Book Crush for Kids and Teens, recommended reading for every mood, moment, and interest. She started If All Seattle Read the Same Book, which was copied by many cities really all over the world. She's the former executive director of the Washington Center for the Book. She speaks at libraries and bookstores all over the country. She's a regular on National Public Radio's Morning Edition and is with us quite often as well to give book recommendations. Today, something different. We're looking at why we're not reading. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Nancy Pearl is with us as we respond to the National Endowment for the Arts report. Yesterday, it was released, To Read or Not to Read, A Question of National Consequence. And our next caller is Dylan from Milwaukee. Hi, Dylan.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
I'm doing well. I just wanted to comment on the fact that video games aren't necessarily the end of everything. I'm an avid video game player, and I was reading the Robert Jordan Wheel of Time series, and I actually gave my video games to a friend for over a month so that way I could do nothing but read. And I'd also like to mention that there's an excellent author of graphic novels named Garth Ennis, who is totally, totally underrated, but excellent read. And that's about all I have to say.
So it was the book that got you to decide to give away the video games for a while? Are you doing both now?
Actually, I finished the books that they had available, Dylan, D-Y-L-A-N. And, yeah, it was a wonderful read, I actually.
Mm-hmm.
I actually gave everything away to a friend. It was that new fancy Xbox, too.
So you can do both, huh, Nancy? If you can lessen your need to play a lot of video games, right?
Well, you know, I think that what you can do, and what this caller, I think, spoke to, is that you can enjoy both equally, or for a time get into a series of books or an author. And Robert Jordan's The Wheel of Time is a great example. And people who love to play those imaginative video games, I think, would enjoy a lot of fantasy and or science fiction if they were introduced to it in the right way.
Mm-hmm. An email, Pam from Shell Lake, to change this trend, we must work with children and instill a love of learning and curiosity of books in them. Specifically, how can we do this with boys? Do you have a resource list that would encourage and enable and engage, rather, elementary boys in their reading?
I think that this has to be a combined effort between educators, parents, among educators, parents, and librarians. I think that boys are what you need to do with all children is find books that match what their interests are. And for that middle grade, younger, you know, a little bit younger, 10, 11, 12 year olds, there are some wonderful, wonderful books that will just turn readers on.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is Terry Pratchett's Only You Can Save Mankind, which is one of his Johnny Maxwell books, which is about a boy playing a computer game. And all of a sudden, these words come across the screen that say, the words say, only you can save mankind. And it's a message from these people in the video game, in the computer game.
Huh.
And he's, of course, embarked on this great adventure. I think there are things, I think we expect kids to read things that they're not enjoying where we would not read books that we don't enjoy.
Right.
And I think that I'm particularly concerned, and especially in light of this, although I hear this all the time from teens that I talk to, are the books that are on reading lists for them. And I think that it's not going to turn anyone into a better human being to read Moby Dick in the 10th or 11th grade. I think that they're not ready to read that book. They're not going to get that book. What it's going to do is going to turn them off the idea of reading altogether, if this is what books are. And it's also going to turn them off of Moby Dick, and they're going to, you know, they're never, as an adult, which is probably when you should read that book,
mm-hmm.
they're never going to go back to it because, you know, they had it in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the whole notion, I think we need to really think why it is that we're assigning books to kids and how it is that we're handling that whole kind of transaction when we're thinking about English classes.
Yeah. You know, I don't think I've ever read Moby Dick, Nancy.
I never finished it.
You didn't?
No. No. You know?
Yeah.
Because it just... And I had very good English teachers.
Mm-hmm.
But and when I read people who talk about the wonders of Moby Dick and how it says this and how it says that, I just think, wow, you know, I wish I had known that.
Right. Thanks so much, Dylan, for your call. Let's go to Mike from Appleton. Hello, Mike.
Yeah, good morning. It would seem to me that perhaps people aren't reading as much as they have in the past for, you know, for several. I think we're just under an overload of information. TV, video games, the news, newspapers. It's like we're constantly bombarded by stuff, and life has changed. You know, there really isn't time. I remember, excuse me, in my youth, I used to read Ray Bradbury, the Mars books, and those were fascinating, but I can't seem to convince my kids to do that because they have access to so many other things today that, you know, reading kind of falls by the wayside.
What are they doing instead, Mike?
A lot of internet.
Yeah.
One thing that I find myself doing, because I don't have time, is I watch C-SPAN a lot and listen to these programs that they have in which they have authors come in and give a brief description of their book. And, well, you know, I guess I say to myself that's better than nothing.
It probably is true, Nancy, isn't it? It's better than nothing.
There is, and actually there's a brand new book out called How to Talk About a Book You Haven't Read.
Oh, that's great.
Pierre Bayard, I think.
There's a good talk show.
Yeah.
How to Talk About a Book You Haven't Read.
He encourages that. He says that, I mean, partly it's tongue-in-cheek. He's a French professor. But partly he's, you know, he's very serious in some ways. It's easier to talk about a book you haven't read.
Yeah.
that?
Well, you know, it is such a part of natural conversation for some people, I'm sure for you every single day, but what a great conversation to talk to somebody. I always ask people, what are you reading? What are you reading? Right. What are you reading? And then you sometimes read the same thing, but you get all these insights from it's just a good way to pass life, right? What are you reading?
It is, and you know, I always think that one of the best ways for a group to get to know one another is just to go around and have everybody say what they're reading. I remember I did that once at a library for a library staff, and people were amazed at what their coworkers were reading. And there were connections made that wouldn't have been made
Yes.
had we not talked about those books.
Yes. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. And if you'd like to send us an email, you could do that. Our email is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. We're very happy to have Nancy Pearl with us. Nancy's latest book, as this study looks a lot at what happens to teenagers and young adults with reading. Less than one-third of 13-year-olds are daily readers, a 14% decline from 20 years ago. Among 17-year-olds, the percentage of non-readers doubled over a 20-year period from 9% to 19% in 2004. On average, Americans ages 15 to 24 spend almost 2 hours a day watching television and only 7 minutes of their daily leisure time on reading. Nancy's out to change that with her latest book, which is Book Crush, for kids and teens, recommended reading for every mood, moment, and interest. But she's done wonders for adults, too, in recommending books. Daniel Golden is going to be joining us in a moment. He is the general manager of the Harry W. Schwartz Bookshops, a wonderful independent bookshop. Well, there are several of them in the southeastern Wisconsin area, and he'll be with us to talk about the fact that their stores are flourishing. They're building more of them, and every time I go into Schwartz, there are a lot of people there. So we'll find out who is buying books right now and how they're fostering reading. We will be with him in just one moment. Back to phone calls for Nancy. Jordan is next from Whitewater. Hi, Jordan.
How are you?
All right. How are you, Jordan?
Doing great.
Good.
Well, one thing, I'm a student at Whitewater, and one thing I wish that I kind of see is I wish I would have read more when I was younger and throughout high school, because coming into school, there's a lot of words that I think, and I've kind of always studied myself, that seems like I should know, but I don't really know, and I kind of scan over it. So the book isn't really, or that textbook really isn't as meaningful. Mm-hmm. So I listen to NPR, and I like, if I'm studying economics, I type in economics and listen to that. So I kind of get both ways of it.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I've noticed is kind of on the TV, like all our goals, it seems for young, is to get a good job and be wealthy, you know, and get, you know, be rich when you're older, be happy. And the way that TV, it's really easy to sit down and watch these shows where they just publicize the glamorous life. And it's so much easier to do that than actually read. And it seems that, you know, you got to take one step at a time, and you're going from, you always put yourself in this visual of watching other people's success, but not really knowing how to get there.
Hmm.
So one thing that I always, and I can't wait to read, is next I went to summer school here because there's no distractions, and I got a lot better grades because there's not a lot of people here, and I don't watch TV. I think TV is the devil because it takes all my time. but I can't wait for next semester because I took off the second semester so I can read. And I think there's a lot of great benefits. One book that always sticks in my mind is Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Mm-hmm.
That's a business book, and there's some concepts I took out of there that are just, they've changed my life, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
And just being able to, you know, like she said before.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was trying to get our next guest, and I lost you by mistake. Forgive me, please. I mean, it makes an interesting point. I wish I had started reading when I was younger. Part of the thought behind that is there's so much to read, you would have had some of it behind you, right, Nancy? There are a lot of books.
Right, and one book or one group of books can build on another.
I think
that you know, there's that sort of lovely picture of when we're not reading them, books are sitting next to each other on the shelves talking to each other about what's in them. I do think the earlier you start to read, the better life can be for you.
Mm-hmm. Daniel Golden is joining our conversation. I'm sure Nancy knows Daniel. He's a general manager of Harry W. Schwartz Bookshops. There are several of them in southeastern Wisconsin. He is a voracious reader, and I'm sure we'll have a lot of comments about why it is that we're not reading as much and who is reading. Daniel, thank you very much. And Nancy, do you two know each other?
Nancy has actually done an event for us at the Milwaukee Public Library.
Right.
I did.
And
right.
I was in the background just being a bookseller. So I don't think we did any chatting. I tend to be one of the people like helping people on in the line and things like that.
Thank you. Thanks,
great
Daniel.
To be on Kathleen's show with you, Daniel.
Oh, it's an honor. Before I say anything else, I was thinking about that person who came on who said he turned off the his video games to read the entire Wheel of the Robert Jordan series, and I thought, oh, somebody has to go tell him to read the George R. R. Martin series.
Right.
Turn off for another 2 months.
Oh, it's always something. There's always something to read. Obviously, your stores are doing very well, Daniel, and there are a number of bookstores flourishing in this country, so there are some people who are reading, right? Do you feel that you are attracting new people to the world of reading, or is it just sort of a number of people who are, and it's becoming smaller, but that those are the people who buy the books, those are the people who read?
Well, I would say that it is a challenge, actually, in the environment to make readers and to keep customers, and it's been definitely harder over the years. There's obviously more options for people to buy books, but also what you said about there being a lot more entertainment options and information options, and those are really the two things that really books that people come to books for is an escape, as Nancy said, and also to get information. And one is disappearing because, you know, the information one is disappearing because there are so many different ways to get it. The entertainment one, I don't think I agree with you that the experience of reading is so different than any other option. It's so, you know, even though I'm not writing the book as I read it, I feel like there's a much more engagement than a lot of the other ways to entertain, which are so passive.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely hear it all the time from people. I also totally agree that when people tell me they don't have time to read, I can always find another person who's much busier than them who has plenty of time to read.
Right. This figure of 7 minutes a day is pretty striking, isn't it, Nancy?
It is. It's one wonders what those 7 minutes are.
Right.
You know, it sometimes takes me 7 minutes to find just the right book that I want to read and pull it off the shelf. But it's horrifying, and it's horrifying and it's sad. Maybe sad is a better word, a closer word to what I'm feeling. I think that I think that those people are just losing so much. Are not, to put it in positive terms, I think they're not getting everything that they could get that reading can give to you.
Well, the other thing that worries me, and tell me if I'm taking this too far, it seems to me as though we're on the way to creating kind of this elite class in this country. Those are the people who read. Those are the people who are civically involved. Those are the people who may vote more than others. They're more engaged in their communities. They get better jobs. They make more money, et cetera. That reading has a direct correlation to all of those. And so those who read will receive. Daniel?
I think that definitely is a problem. I think that we see you know there we see long term consequences of people not reading enough. But as we all know from addressing, say, smoking, people don't really think about long term consequences, particularly when they're younger. And so my thought was, okay, the study really needs to show that if you don't read, you're going to die of some terrible disease really soon. And that maybe would get people to read more.
I'm not sure what the disease would be. Are you, Nancy?
Well, I mean, I think that what needs to be done is to, you know, and rather than just saying yes to reading, I think that we need to show people what it is we're talking about that the pleasures of reading can bring you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not, the NEA tried to quantify them in that previous study, but I think that that sort of quantification doesn't, I think that it's the books themselves that we need to sell to these people on the basis of enjoyment.
Right.
Not on the basis of medicine. Or,
right.
You know.
Let's go back to phone calls. Judy is next from Poinette. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I have a comment and a question. My comment first is that I love Chapter a Day. I love books on tape. I love the comfort of being read to. It reminds me of being a little kid.
Right.
And my question is, how long do you give a book? Let's say the book doesn't just grab you right away. How long do you give it before you finally give up on it?
Oh, Nancy's got a formula, don't you, Nancy?
Right, I do have a formula. And I'm not sure how this would work for audio books because I haven't been asked that specific aspect of it. My formula is, if you're 50 years of age and younger, give a book 50 pages. If you're over 50, when time gets really short in the world, the book gets really large, even larger than it already is, then subtract your age from 100, and that number, which gets smaller every year, is the number you should read before you give up on a book.
Yeah.
It's kind of a flip answer to a lighthearted answer to a deeply held belief of mine, which is that you should, unless it's a school assignment or for your book club, then I think you need to finish the book. But I think that no one should slog through a book that they're not enjoying, no matter how well-reviewed the book was, no matter what prize it won, that it just, there are so many wonderful, wonderful books out there. As Daniel pointed out, you know, the George R. R. Martin books to fans of the Robert Jordan books, it's a perfect connection. And it's a perfect antidote to the feeling that you get when you finish a series of books that you love. Where can I go next? And that's the kind of excitement that you don't get enough of if you're finishing a book that you hate.
And this advice would hold true for people of all ages, for children as well, Nancy?
It would. When I was writing Book Crush, I you know, had felt I had to come up with a different formula. The 50 pages wouldn't work for many books. So what I thought about and sort of tested for myself is just read 3 chapters of a book.
Mm-hmm.
And if the child is not enjoying that book, encourage them to put it down, him or her to put it down, pick up something else.
Mm-hmm. Daniel, what do you think of that advice?
It's funny because I've, of course, known Nancy's advice, but when I first started, I had to come up with a formula because we go through so many books, and it was 50 pages or 10% of the book for a really long book. So I let, you know, if I read, you know, Tree of Smoke, I think I got to page 100 before I realized I was having trouble figuring out who the characters were. but recommended it to the right person, and other people in the store really loved it. Right. I almost feel, though, sometimes for me it works, sometimes for, you know, especially for trying to rope in somebody who's really not connecting with reading, I think sometimes it needs to be even less, and I almost want to say, you know, read, don't even leave the library or the bookstore without reading 10, 15 pages of it. Just sit down somewhere and see if you can handle it. And otherwise, just get something else right away.
Mm-hmm.
And talk to a librarian or a bookseller to try to match up the book.
Right.
Because we so need people to fall in love with the book so that they have that emotion that leads them to wanting the next book.
Yeah. Thanks so much for the call. More phone calls in a moment. We are talking this hour of the program about the National Endowment for the Arts, To Read or Not to Read, A Question of National Consequence, their report released yesterday. And it's an alarming report. It's a comprehensive analysis of reading patterns in this country, gathering statistics from more than 40 studies on the reading habits and skills of children, teenagers, and adults. And it reveals that recent declines in voluntary reading and test scores alike are exposing trends that have severe consequences for American society. And our guests are Nancy Pearl. Nancy is a wonderful librarian who's really brought a love of the book to this country in a way that nobody else has. Her latest book is Book Crush for Kids and Teens, recommended reading for every mood, moment, and interest. She's the author of a number of other books. She started with Book Lust in 2003, and there are sequels to that, more Book Lust, Book Lust Journal. She's done two guides to mainstream fiction, and she is a frequent guest on Morning Edition and here on public radio in Wisconsin and public radio all over the country. Also joining us is Daniel Golden, and Daniel is the general manager of Harry W. Schwartz Bookshops, a terrific independent bookstore. Well, there are more than one, several of them in southeastern Wisconsin. Okay, back to your phone calls in a moment at 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The National Endowment for the Arts Study, To Read or Not to Read, a Question of National Consequence, is our focus this hour. We have an email, Nancy and Daniel, from Angela from Fond du Lac. I always try to tell my friends with children that readers aren't necessarily born, that I've created my little readers. I remember the Christmas I opened a gift full of books from my father. It was the day that he created a reader.
First of all, I have to just say, hearing somebody from Fond du Lac always makes me think with such fondness back to reading Maureen Daly's 17th Summer, which is one of the kind of iconic books for teen girls especially. So it's always nice when I'm on the show to have somebody call from there, because I flash back to that wonderful book. And I do think, I mean, that's a wonderful image of, yeah, of getting those books and getting as excited about those books as you would about a new doll or an electric train.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that you have people come into your bookshops all over Milwaukee who get that special book and create that special opening of a present of books all the time, Daniel.
Absolutely. And I think that one of the things I was thinking about this with one of the callers, too, that are so important for your kids is that, like so many habits, good and bad, especially at a younger age, kids pay attention to what their parents are doing. And so giving your kids books is really great and very, very important, but I think it's also important that your kids see you reading as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes a big, I think that makes a big difference, especially at a younger age when we're imitating what our parents do. Okay, maybe when a kid gets to be a teenager, going to your kid and saying, I really hate books, there's nothing I hate more than reading, mm-hmm. might help.
Yeah. Yeah. Teresa from Viroqua. Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
Hi.
I have teenagers, so addressing that teenage issue, actually I'm a mother with seven kids, and my kids are big, big readers, and I think the first key is to turn off the TV. But once you get beyond that, I was kind of shocked to hear in that study that they were looking at houses that had 26 books. We have more than 26 books in any room, let alone in the whole house. But one thing that I have found with teenagers when they get to that point is to give them what I kind of call the forbidden books. You know, you give them really kind of what they want. Books about sex, books about drugs, books about rock and roll. You kind of put that stuff
mm-hmm.
out there. And even if you address kids where they're at developmentally, they like, for instance, teenagers are such rebels, you know, so you give them books about rebellion. And you even challenge them not to read them, and then they do. those are some of the tricks that I've learned. But I think for parents, it's just so important to kind of allow your kids to delve into the things that they're interested in, even if it's not what you consider on the classics list. You know, when my daughter was in fifth grade, she got into People magazine, and I was horrified. But, you know, she was reading it from cover to cover. And eventually, the older kids are constantly talking about the things that they're reading, and recommending things for the younger kids to read. And it's really been the key to getting them all to be avid readers. And,
yeah.
I mean, they even call their sister in college to find out what she is reading so that they can add that to their list or see what she thinks about this book or that book. And so it's a real way to connect with your kids.
Mm-hmm. Teresa, I like your style. I think Nancy will agree with your approach entirely. Nancy?
Yes, and I suspect Daniel will as well.
Yes.
Absolutely. I think that one of the things that we have to do to get kids to read is to start where they are. And if, you know, People magazine is what your daughter's reading, there are some really interesting biographies after that. Or there are some really interesting novels that are about people who are in the same situation that the people they're reading about in People magazine.
Mm-hmm. I've told this story before. I labored over whether or not I gave my son Catcher in the Rye at too early an age. But he read it. You know, he read every single page of it, and then he wrote his own Catcher in the Rye. You know, so I guess it was okay. I still question that, but that's the kind of thing he wanted, you know, and all he had to say was, boy, here was a book I read in high school that made a huge impression on me and all of my friends, and I think you might be too young for it. Well, that's all it took, you know. He was off and running with Catcher in the Rye. Thanks, Teresa, very much for the call. Daniel, you want to comment on what Teresa said? I thought she was a great caller.
I think that it's a great thing. We had a an educator, Dick Allington, who spoke to a bunch of teachers who said, you know, if you really want your kids to read, just go to a bookstore, go to a library, talk to the not what people should read, but what other kids are asking for. What do they want to read? What do they love to read? And get them started.
Yeah. Another email from Carolyn from Waukesha. I have two boys, ages 7 and 10. The 7-year-old is in first grade and is a beginning reader. The 10-year-old knows how to read, but he doesn't like to read. I've been reading together chapter books to get them both interested in books and reading on their own. They enjoy this. Am I actually helping the 10-year-old, or am I making him lazy? Daniel?
I was hoping this one would go to Nancy first. But I mean, I think all studies show this is about reading aloud. I don't think there's any study that shows that that's bad. But I can easily be corrected on that, and I will never say it again. But I think it's actually helps a kid. Jumps a kid to reading on their own, whatever age they mm-hmm. are. I still like being read aloud, too. So.
Oh, yes, yes. Nancy?
Oh, I totally agree. I think that what this mother is doing with her 10-year-old is a wonderful way to get the 10-year-old to see the joys of reading.
Mm-hmm.
And remember the caller that we had who said she listened to audiobooks because it made her feel, you know, sort of cozy and snuggly and like
right.
a little girl being read to. I think, in fact, we stop reading to our kids at far too young an age,
yeah.
and that there should be a lot more reading allowed in schools through middle school.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that mother is doing exactly the right thing.
I agree. Kay is next from Muskego. Hi, Kay.
Hi. I appreciate the viewpoints that everybody's been given, but I am a special education teacher with a focus on reading instruction, and I am currently pursuing my master's in reading intervention strategies. And you all are saying wonderfully lofty concepts. And I think what we are all appalled at is the statistics of kids reading, but we really, really need to back it down to the slogging in the trenches kids in school. I've heard no mention of picture books during this entire conversation. And truthfully, middle school kids love picture books. The same books that appeal to kindergartners and to first graders appeal to middle school kids for different qualities. And yes, you can never read enough to a child. Studies have consistently shown that young emergent readers need to be read to and immersed in print for their love of reading to grow. It's not just something that we can say by the time a child is in third or fourth grade, hey, you know what, let's make you into a reader. The basis of it has been sown long before, at probably ages 3 through 5. And so we've really got a huge, huge goal in front of us to make our kids readers. But we're just going at it from a very lofty point of view. You guys are talking about autobiographies and biographies. And, you know, to the average, really, seriously, to the average everyday person out there, and I'm a public school teacher, they, A, don't care what they are, B, don't know what they are, and C, therefore, never transfer this to their kids.
Nancy.
You know, we didn't talk about picture books because the study focused on readers 9 years and up. I certainly agree that there are, I don't disagree with anything that you've said. I think that what we always need to do is find the book or books that will delight the reader. And we depend on, I think that it goes one step, you know, there's a literacy that I think we need to be concerned with. I think that that's what this study is talking about, that there are kids who can read but choose not to read because they don't see what's in it for them.
Mm-hmm.
And what our job is, as teachers and librarians and parents, is to show them what's in it for them. And if that is, you know, there's a wonderful picture book called Nothing But Trouble, which is a biography of Althea Gibson. And it's a book that has everything you would want in a picture book, fabulous, fabulous illustrations. And yet at the same time, readers, young readers, are going to learn about this tennis player who, you know, was the first African-American to play at Wimbledon.
And on that note, we have to say goodbye. Thank you both so much. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you. Nancy, thanks. Daniel, thank you. Nancy Pearl with us, and we'll have her on again, we hope, before the big holiday gift-giving time to recommend books. Daniel Golden, General Manager of Harry W. Schwartz Bookshops. Thanks to Peter Donalds for producing this hour, John Treader for on-air production. We'll return following the news on the Ideas Network.